Mr. Hayward, Reel 7. We were talking about when you first joined the 2nd Fife and Four Fire Yeomanry at Hove, late May 1942. And we were looking at the composition of the headquarters company, and we'd got on to the nitty-gritty of the actual workshops. Were there any other workshop personnel that we haven't mentioned, or any other drivers, fitters and things attached?
I would say not. I would say we've covered the makeup. That would probably check out with any records. I can't remember. They wouldn't have too many people. It wasn't necessary, because some of the time they were just not doing anything much. There wasn't any need for repairs.
Did they have fitters or, mechanics actually with the companies? Were there other mechanics within the regiment?
There was such a thing as a driver mechanic. That was another. I believe they could qualify. I think there was a qualification as part of the tank crew, possibly on the vehicles too. If you became a driver mechanic, you'd probably have a slight pay rise. Might be fairly small, but very modest, but a driver mechanic would be, he would not be expected to do the sort of thing that a workshop mechanic did. He would certainly have to do very attentive maintenance on his vehicle.
Such as, what level would he be working at then?
Well, maintenance would be making sure that all the levels were topped up, and that things...
Without water and oil, or...
Water and oil, anything else, battery, acid, distilled water, so on. And brake fluid, if there was such a thing, they probably had hydraulic fluid in use then. Yes, they certainly would. But the other types of maintenance the driver would be expected to do would be to make sure that the tracks were adjusted to the right tension, and also that the brakes were functioning. And
what about the running of the actual engine? As you said, the tuning, the various parts of tuning the engine. Would he do that, or would you do that?
No, he wouldn't do that. The driver mechanic would. He would perhaps be expected to run the engine and listen to it, if he thought there was any fault, then he'd call in the workshops. He wouldn't attempt to put that right himself.
So he now how many? So you've got a squadron, and you've got a troop of four tanks, and how many of those would be driver mechanics? Were there many in the regiment?
I'm only guessing. I would think if anybody wanted to be a driver mechanic as a simple driver, I think they were probably given the opportunity to take a course, before we went into battle, in other words. On that basis, if my guess is right, then every driver could be a mechanic as well.
So quite a lot would be. If they weren't, in other words, if they were just drivers, would you have to do the maintenance jobs that you've just said? In other words, would you check their the various fluid levels and batteries and things for them?
No. There was a set routine. The sergeant in charge, for instance, of an echelon, a group of vehicles, would come round at a certain point and say, it's time to do the weekly maintenance. And every driver would have to get down then and we all had a little booklet showing what we had to do at intervals.
Was there I know that in some areas they have a daily, weekly, and monthly and annual sort of routine of maintenance, and you do it on these bases.
Yeah.
Is that what this little book was?
It would be something of that nature.
So what sort of thing would you do daily, weekly, monthly then? Which was which?
Well, the most frequent jobs you'd have to do would be to check the tyre pressures, to check that you've got enough petrol in the tank, check your oil level, check your battery.
How would you check the tracks as opposed to tyres? Or was that if it wasn't the tyre?
Yes,
it wasn't
the actual tracks. Well, they would be checked in the case of a tank, as it, unless it was in battle, it didn't move around much. They would possibly be checked after each exercise. Every time the tank had been out somewhere, it would be checked over, ready for the next exercise, and then just left until it was needed.
Would part of would they be expected to keep vehicles and the tanks clean, as opposed to functionally clean? So
yes, definitely. Yes, we had to make sure the vehicles were clean, and so that was another job to be done after an exercise, because they usually got pretty awful, muddy and dusty, so they had to be washed down.
Even the tanks.
Even the tanks, yes.
And how fussy were they about the cleanliness? I mean, was it obsessive cleaning, or was it just...
Not obsessive, no, but it would have to pass an inspection. There would be an inspection of the vehicles after.
And what were they looking for?
Oh, they would be looking for bits of mud caked that hadn't been spotted, and, perhaps in hidden places. They would have a good look. They'd stick their head under the track and make sure there wasn't anything clean, especially around the wheels at the ends, the sprockets and either wheels. But as far as the underside of the tank was concerned, I don't think they bothered too much about that, as long as it wasn't visible.
So, and what sort of tasks would be done infrequently?
Infrequently?
Monthly or even yearly?
Yes, good question. Well, the more infrequent jobs would be if it had, say, sparking plugs on the engine, you'd perhaps take those out every month, or perhaps 3 months, every 3 months maybe. If the vehicle, depending on the use of the vehicle, but those would be more infrequent jobs.
And you'd clean them?
Yeah, and you'd clean them up with a wire brush, and then check the setting to make sure the gap was correct. Similarly, you'd check the... what they call the contact brake on the distributor. Make sure that had the correct gap and that the two contacts weren't burnt or pitted, in which case they might have to be replaced.
And would the driver do that, or would you?
The driver could do it, yes. The driver mechanic would do that, yes.
But a driver would just tell you? If you found it to be so.
That's right, yes.
Anything else?
Well, certainly in lifting the bonnet over the engine or the hatches, you would have to see that everything was in apple pie order there, that there was no wiring detached or pipes loose anywhere. You'd give a good check over and make sure everything was tight. Nothing sort of flapping about in its wrong place, come out of a clip perhaps, and flapping near some moving object which could sever it, whatever it was, a pipe or a wire.
No, I think it was about time we actually mentioned it. What tanks did they actually have at Hove?
Yes, well, I think they had both Matildas and Valentines at Hove.
Now, would they be separated with, one squadron would have Matildas and one squadron would have Valentines, or how did they sort it out when they had sort of more than one tank?
That I don't know. I can't truthfully answer that question, except that I would imagine that at that stage of the war, they were probably making do with what they could get, and therefore, if they had both Matildas and Valentines, as I said, they then they would be split, and perhaps, for instance, if they say had three squadrons and they had four Matildas, they would have one to each squadron and perhaps one in HQ, and then the rest would be Valentine's.
Now, I don't need you to describe the appearance, because we can see that they can see pictures of both these tanks. They're not. But what to you, especially from your perspective in the as a mechanic, what were the characteristics of the Matilda and the Valentine? Were they different from each other as mechanical objects, equally reliable or equally unreliable?
Yes, well, the main characteristic or difference between Matilda and Valentine was that Matilda had a very closed in look about it. For instance, you could barely see the tracks because the sides were covered up with metal sheeting, quite thick metal sheeting. Whereas the Valentine, you could see the whole of the track movement, the rollers and everything, run like a Sherman. You could see it all. Whereas the Matilda was very neatly sort of shut in. Probably made it more difficult to do maintenance on it with that set up. But it certainly had a more impressive appearance of being perhaps armoured to a greater extent than the Valentine. The two tanks were terribly typically British. They had a very neat look about them. They looked very well engineered, and although they were slow and badly gunned, very lightly gunned, and possibly armoured too, very lightly armoured compared to pointer tanks, I believe they were very efficient and very impressive.
Was there any particular problems that you as a mechanic would have to deal with, or things that would you think, oh God, it's gone wrong again, or did they have prevailing problems, or were they just reliable pieces of engineering?
Not to my knowledge. I don't remember the workshops down at Hove, for instance, as having great problems with taking tanks apart. They seem to be clear of that sort of thing.
What sort of work would you be doing then? Would you be working on them, or would you be working on the lorries a lot of the time?
Basically, I'd be in the workshops picking up tips on what they were doing to the vehicles in the regiment. One occasion, for instance, I think it was a bit of a joke. I'm not sure whether it was a deliberate. I don't think it was, but they sent me out to sort out a Morris commercial vehicle, which they said was always breaking down. They said it would be a good thing for me to get used to dealing with that.
Whose was it? It's a van, isn't it?
It was a van, and I think it contained the wireless equipment. I think they call it the Gin Palace, I'm joking sort of the name of it. But I went out to this vehicle, I was on my own, and I think it was the first job they sent me out on. So I had to locate the vehicle, which wasn't very far away. And I could sense or see that the workshop crowd was sort of sniggering as I set off. So I thought, they were either sniggering at the fact that they'd given me this job on this, what they called a jinx burger, to do, or they'd deliberately set it up to see if I could cope. I don't know, I shouldn't know the answer to that. But anyway, when I got there, the first thing I did was to question the driver as to what went wrong. And he said, well, it just came to a stop. And so I said, well, what did you do then? Well, he said, I lifted up the bonnet to see if I could see anything radically wrong. And he said, I undid the distributor cap and took the rotor arm out and had a look at that, and that seemed all right, so I put it back in. And so that was the first thing I went to. Lifted up the cap, he put the cap back on right, but he hadn't put the rotor arm back right. It was in the wrong position, so it didn't work like that. So I put it back in its correct position. Jumped inside. Well, I think I probably asked him to switch on with probably a hand on the front, and I gave it a turn and it went away. So the question is, why did it break down? That's the answer. I shall never know to that. But I was satisfied.
So you suspect that they'd deliberately taken the rope just to see whether you could spot something that simple?
Could have been, because I was back in the workshop in next to no time and feeling pretty good myself. But I don't think at the time it occurred to me that they might have tried it on.
So what else were you doing? I'm thinking about Hove, your first weeks. What the
down in Hove, yes, we weren't there very long. I don't think the regiment had been there very long when I joined them. They'd come down from Whitby. And so we did a few army exercises in conjunction with other regiments of the division down on the Sussex Downs. And generally entertained ourselves as Brighton was close by.
What would you do during these exercises? As a headquarters, you know,
yes,
generally, and as the workshop in particular.
Well, again, that is a bit of a mystery, because I do remember one exercise where I was on the workshop truck with Jimmy Milne driving, and we were following instructions, following a column, but nothing very much happened. We just manoeuvred and moved about the countryside, and then eventually came back to Hove. I don't remember that we even stayed up the night. I think it was probably a day exercise.
And you, fundamentally, it sounds like you're just driving around. Was it an exercise in almost moving the regiment as a regiment?
Yes, I think it was mainly for the benefit of the tanks, so that we wouldn't see in the workshops what the tanks were doing. They'd be up on the downs somewhere.
Would you have to repair any that broke down?
You certainly would if they broke down, but I don't remember being called upon for that. So they obviously were performing all right.
And any other? You seem to have been in the Sussex area, but there's quite a few moves. You go to Brighton, Stanmer Park in August, and then to Chailey, Haywards Heath. It's all much of a muchness of the area. Do you remember anything specific about these places, or are they all blurred together?
Well, I remember that I wasn't actually in Stanmer Park. I knew of its existence, that some of the regiment were there. HQ Squadron was certainly in Hove, but then we as HQ moved out of Hove to this tented under canvas camp at Haywards Heath, Chailey, further up, beyond Lewis. And at that time, the old Blue Bar line was still functioning as a through railway. We could hear them chugging by our camp, but down to Lewis. But the Stanmer Park, I suspect that some of the regiment had been in Stanmer Park. Probably the fighting squadrons had been there and weren't actually in Hove, as HQ was. And so the time I actually spent in Hove, but when we were in Hove, we were in a sort of seaside hotel or boarding house on bare boards, no beds or anything, just sleeping on the bare boards. And that to me didn't last very long, so I would say at the most we were probably there about 3 or 4 weeks before we moved to Chailey. And there again, we weren't there too long before we moved later in that summer up to the East Anglia area.
Anything about Chailey?
Well, we certainly did another exercise, because...
Is that exercise Tiger?
It might have been, yes. I think it might have been that one where, for some reason, I was in a 1,500-weight truck with a chap called Godden.
Now, who was he?
Trooper Godden, G-O-D-D-E-N. I just remember him as a very tall chap, and quite a joker. He didn't seem to mind getting himself into trouble.
Not part of the workshop?
He wasn't part of the workshop, so I don't know how it happened, but I must have been at the time just given a job to do, like a spare bolt he did, perhaps in charge of this truck. But anyway, we did wander a bit off the route. We hadn't any specific instructions as far as I could gather, and we found ourselves so close to my home that we motored into my parents' drive up this farmyard, much to their surprise, and spent a pleasant hour there before we thought it was advisable to get back on course somewhere and pick up the regiment again.
Did anyone notice?
Nobody ever found out, no. No, that was a bit of a perk, you know, one of the perks. But it's curious how these things could happen. But obviously to do that, we couldn't have been attached to anybody in particular. There was no new sergeant particularly watching out for us. So we seized the opportunity to do something like that, as anybody else would have done in those days.
There's a reference to you riding motorbikes at one point. I mean, why would you have a motorbike?
That would be simply a bike that was in the workshops for repair. I was given the job of repairing it. I think it was something fairly simple, like a brake cable that had shed its nipple at the end, which had to be soldered back on. And I was given this job, and I think, as far as I recall, the repair hadn't been done, so I made some sort of a temporary repair because we suddenly got the orders to move. And I had to drive this sort of unrepaired motorbike up to East Anglia from Chailey. And I was given the job of sort of supervising the column of vehicles to make sure they kept up with each other. And that was very enjoyable because the weather was quite nice at the time. And having driven a motorcycle before I joined the army, of course, there was no problem there.
Now, where were you going to in East Anglia? You moved about a bit in the scene.
Yes, we did. We went first to a hutted camp at a place, village called Fallen All Saints. Fallen All Saints near Bury St Edmunds.
What was the situation there?
It was just the usual conglomeration of huts with the usual mess hall. I don't remember that it was equipped with a nappy canteen. I think it was fairly basic, but at least it was not under canvas, and so we were back to proper beds, army type beds. And I think it was there. No, it couldn't have been there. I don't think where I spent my 21st birthday, but no, that was too early in the year for it to be that.
When did you go to Fornham, do you remember?
When? Well, it must have been, it was certainly still summertime. I would imagine it would be about August 1942.
So you hadn't been at Chailey long?
No, I hadn't been at Chailey very long at all.
And were you doing anything specific at Fornham?
As far as I gather from the reading the records, the regiment were then parting company with the Matildas and Valentine tanks and were being equipped with Crusaders. They were a different style of tank altogether. They had rather large wheels with rubber tyres, the usual small rollers at the top of the tracks, but they had these large wheels which were independently sprung. So these tanks could gallop across the countryside at a faster pace than the old type tanks.
Any other advantages or disadvantages of the Crusader?
Well, I think it was, as far as I recall, it was equipped with a 6-pounder gun rather than the 2-pounders, so they had a better gun, although it was still only a short affair, with a short barrel. So I suppose being a short-barreled gun, it wouldn't have fired any great distance.
Were there any problems as you had, from your perspective again, from workshops that you had with the Crusade, any faults that they would develop, or were they, again, well-engineered?
Yes, British tanks, and I can't remember any particular faults.
Were they easy to maintain?
I would have thought so, yes.
You know, access to the...
Access, yes. And I think they might have problems occasionally with these rubber tired large wheels. They might have to take one off and perhaps fit a new one, or examine the springing at the back of it. But I don't recall any major problems with them.
Did you regard them as a great advance on the Matildas and Valentines, or were they seen as a bit of an advance, but still not? I mean,
I would say the tank crews did find them a great advance on the other slow-moving tanks. They had the greater speed, and they were also a better gun.
Were they aware of how far German tank technology had got on? I mean, were they aware of things like the Tiger tank and the bigger, you know, Mark IV things? Were they aware that the Germans might have a better tank than the Crusader? Or were they confident in them?
I think they were probably aware of it, but at that stage, I don't think they were too worried, because they, with having swapped tanks fairly frequently since the formation of the regiment, I would think that they probably hoped that by the time they did go into battle, they would have an even better tank. It was only a question of waiting for the production line to get going, because that was the main problem, wasn't it? This is where America came in, because, you know, where we found America so useful, because they could produce things which we needed at a faster pace and build up the supplies of equipment which we were so desperately short of.
So that you were getting these at Farnham. Anything else happened at Farnham All Saints? That's near Bury St Edmunds.
No, I only remember about Farnham that being within walking distance of Bury St Edmunds, we did try entertaining ourselves down there, but we didn't find the local population very receptive.
In what way?
They tended to. We noticed that the town had a kind of shut-up look about it at nights. Even quite early on in the evening, nobody seemed to come out of their doors. They all seemed to be shut up. And we got the feeling that perhaps some other regiment had been there before us and hadn't left a very good impression on the townsfolk. So we decided that as the people there weren't very friendly, and the beer there we didn't like very much. We found it had a peculiar flavour. It was Green King's, probably wartime beer, and we couldn't get on with it. We'd been told some funny stories about how they put fish in the beer or something in the tanks, in the vats, and the pub atmosphere was not very cordial, so. We got the message and stayed away, and shortly afterwards we moved to Chippenham,